By the time Carlton, Colette, Nick, and Rachel reached the front door of the main pavilion, the entire staff was already assembled at the foot of the steps. Rachel attempted to count the number of people but stopped at 30. The maids stood elegantly in their black silk cheapows on the left, and the men in their black James Purse uniforms on the right, creating two diagonal lines in V formation, like migrating geese. Colette took her place at the apex of the V as the rest of the group waited at the top of the steps. Colette turned around and made a final inspection.
"Who has the towels? The hot towels?"
One of the younger maids stepped out of the line holding a small silver chest.
"What are you doing? Get back in formation!" Roxanne screamed as the convoy of black Audi SUVs came speeding up the driveway.
The doors on the lead SUV flung open, and several men in black suits and dark sunglasses emerged, one of them approaching the middle car and opening the door. Judging by how thick the door was, Nick surmised it was a reinforced, bomb-proof model. A short, stocky man in a bespoke three-piece suit was the first to emerge. Roxanne, who was standing next to Nick, let out a barely audible gasp. Seeing that the man appeared to be no older than his mid-twenties, Nick asked,
"I take it that's not Colette's father?"
"It's not," Roxanne said curtly, before stealing a quick glance at Carlton.
Chapter 9. Michael and Astrid, Singapore. "Is that all you're wearing?" Michael asked, lurking by the doorway of Astrid's dressing room.
"What do you mean? Am I too scantily clad for you?"
Astrid joked as she struggled to fasten the delicate clasp on her sandals. "You look so casual."
"I'm not that casual," Astrid said, standing up.
She was wearing a short black tunic dress with crochet panels and black fringe.
"We're going to one of the best restaurants in Singapore, and it's with the IBM people."
"Just because Andre is a top restaurant doesn't mean it's formal. I thought this was just a casual business dinner with a few of your clients."
"It is, but the big wig is flying in and he's bringing his wife, who's supposedly very chic."
Astrid shot Michael a look. Had aliens secretly abducted her husband and replaced him with some finicky fashion editor? In the 6 years they had been married, Michael had never made a single comment about what she wore. He had, on certain occasions, grunted that something looked sexy or pretty on her, but he had never used a word like chic. Until today, it wasn't part of his vocabulary. Astrid dabbed a little rose essential oil onto her neck and said,
"If the wife is as chic as you say, she will probably appreciate this El Tuzara dress. It's a runway look that never went into production, which I'm wearing with Tabitha Simmons silk stripe sandals, lean Votra gold earrings, and my Peranakan gold bracelet."
"Maybe it's all the gold. It looks a bit kansia to me."
"The literal translation is pull vehicle, but this Hokkien term refers to rickshaw pullers or anything that is deemed low class. Of course, Michael has never been to Manhattan, where pedicab drivers tend to be out-of-work male models who charge more than Uber black cars."
"Couldn't you swap it out for diamonds or something?"
"There's nothing kantia about this bracelet. It's actually part of an heirloom suite that my great-aunt Mathilda Leong bequeathed to me, which is now on loan to the Asian Civilizations Museum. They are dying for me to let them display this piece too, but I held on to it for sentimental reasons."
"Sorry, I didn't mean to offend your auntie, and I'm not a fashion gorilla or whatever like you. This is one of the most important business deals I've ever been involved in. But please, wear what you want. I'll be downstairs waiting,"
Michael said in a patronizing tone. Astrid sighed. She knew all this fuss had something to do with that silly Hong Kong gossip columnist barb about Michael needing to upgrade his wife's jewelry. Even though he denied it, the comments must have gotten under her skin. She made her way to the vault, punched in the 9-digit code to open the door, and peered inside. Damn, the earrings she was thinking of were at the big vault at OCBC Bank. The only thing she had of any significant size at home
was a pair of gargantuan Watsky diamond and emerald pendant earrings that her grandmother had inexplicably handed her after Mahjong at Tyersall Park the other day. The emeralds on each side were almost the size of walnuts. Apparently, the last time her grandmother had worn them was at King Bhumibol of Thailand's coronation in 1950. Well, if Michael really wants a Busby Berkeley showstopper, that's what he's going to get. But what outfit could possibly go with these earrings? Astrid scanned her closet and pulled out a black Yves Saint Laurent jumpsuit with a drawstring waist and jet beaded sleeves. This was just dressy and yet simple enough to complement a pair of outrageously bling earrings. She would wear them with a pair of Alaia ankle boots to give the whole look an extra edge. Astrid felt a little lump in her throat as she put the jumpsuit on. She had never worn it before because it was too precious to her. It was Eve's final couture collection in 2002, and though she was only 23 when she had a fitting for this, it still draped against her body more perfectly than almost anything else she owned. God, I miss Eve's. Astrid headed downstairs to the nursery, where she found Michael keeping Cassian company at the children's dining table while he ate his spaghetti with meatballs.
Wow, vous êtes top, madame!
Cassian's nanny exclaimed as Astrid entered.
Merci, Ludovine.
Saint Laurent?
Qui d'autre?
Ludovine placed her hand on her chest and shook her head in awe. She could not wait to try it on as soon as madame left the house tomorrow. Astrid turned to Michael.
Is this good enough to impress your IBM bigwig?
Where on earth did you get those earrings?
Chinoke.
Real or fake in Hokkien?
Michael exclaimed.
Tin. My grandmother just gave them to me, Astrid replied, slightly annoyed that Michael only noticed the earrings and failed to appreciate the subtle genius of her jumpsuit.
Walan.
Literally, my cock. This Hokkien swear is comparable to the American fucking hell.
Van Cleef and Armagh strikes again!
Astrid winced. Michael had punished Cassian for using cuss words, and yet here he was swearing like a sailor right in front of him.
Look, doesn't Mummy look pretty tonight?
Michael said to Cassian, pinching a meatball from his bowl and popping it into his mouth.
Yes, Mummy always looks pretty, Cassian said. And stop stealing my meatballs.
Astrid melted instantly. How could she be annoyed at Michael when he looked so cute sitting in the little chair next to Cassian? Things had gotten much better between father and son since she returned from Venice. After kissing Cassian goodbye, the two of them headed outside to the front driveway, where their chauffeur, Yusef, was doing a final polish on the chrome work of Michael's 1961 red Ferrari California Spider.
Jesus, he's really out to impress tonight, Astrid thought.
Thanks for changing, hun. It really means a lot to me,
Michael said as he held open the car door. Astrid nodded as she climbed in.
If you think it makes any difference, I'm happy to help.
They drove in silence at first, enjoying the balmy breeze through the open top. But as he turned onto Holland Road, Michael picked up the conversation again.
How much do you think your earrings are worth?
Probably more than this car.
I paid $8.9 million for this Rari. You really think your earrings are worth more? We should get them valued.
Astrid found his line of questioning slightly tacky. She never thought of jewelry in terms of prices and wondered why Michael even brought it up.
I'm never going to sell them, so what's the point?
Well, we do want to insure them, don't we?
It all goes under my family's umbrella policy. I just add it to a list that Miss Young keeps at the family office.
I didn't know about this. Can my vintage sports cars get on the policy too?
I don't think so. It's just for Leong's,
Astrid blurted out before regretting her choice of words. Michael didn't seem to notice and continued chattering away.
You're really getting all of your Ama's biggest jewels, aren't you? Your cousins must be envious as hell.
Oh, there's plenty to go around. Fiona got the Grand Duchess Olga sapphires, and my cousin Cecilia got some superb imperial jade. My grandmother is very discerning. She gives the right pieces to whomever she knows will appreciate them the most.
Do you think she feels she's going to conk off soon?
What a thing to say! Astrid exclaimed, giving Michael a look of horror.
Come on, la. It must be going through her mind, which is why she's begun divesting all her stuff. Old people can sense when they're going to die, you know.
Michael, my grandmother has been around all my life, and I can't even begin to imagine the day when she won't be here.
Sorry, I was just making conversation.
They lapsed into silence again, Michael focusing on the client dinner and Astrid contemplating their disagreeable conversation. Michael had always shied away from anything to do with money when they first got married, especially if it involved her family, and went to great pains to show that he had absolutely no interest in her financial affairs. Indeed, their marriage had been rocked to its core by his insecurities over her fortune and his ill-conceived attempt to set her free. But thankfully, that awful period was well behind them. But ever since his business had exploded into a huge success, he had become the proverbial mouse that roared. It dawned on Astrid that at family gatherings these days, her husband always seemed to be at the center of the financial debates with the men. Michael relished being the go-to guy for advice about the tech industry, and the newfound respect he was forging with her father and brothers, who had for years treated him with barely veiled condescension. He had also discovered his acquisitive side, and Astrid had watched in wide-eyed wonder as his taste had upgraded faster than you could say, "Do you take Amex?" She glanced over at him now, cutting such a dashing figure in his dark gray Cesare Attolini suit and his perfectly knotted Borelli tie, the face of his Patek Philippe Nautilus chronograph glinting under the flash of street lamps as he shifted gears forcefully on his iconic automobile, the one that every hot-blooded male from James Dean to Ferris Bueller had coveted. She was proud of all he had achieved, but part of her missed the old Michael, the man who was happiest lounging at home in his soccer kit, enjoying his plate of tau yu bak.
Pork belly cooked in soy sauce, a simple Hokkien dish.
With white rice and his tiger beer. As they drove along palm tree-lined Neil Road, Astrid gazed at all the colorful heritage shop houses. Then she realized they had just sped past the restaurant.
"Hey, you missed the turn. That was Bukit Paso we just passed."
"Don't worry, I did that on purpose. We're going to circle the block for a while."
"Why? Aren't we already late?"
"I've decided to give them a little more time to cool their heels. I instructed the maitre d' to make sure they get drinks at the bar first, and that they are seated right by the window so that they will have the best view of us pulling up. I want all the guys to see me get out of this car, and then I want them to see you getting out of this car."
Astrid almost wanted to laugh. Who was this man next to her talking this way?
Michael continued, "We're playing this game of chicken right now, and I know they want to see who blinks first. They have raging hard-ons to acquire this new proprietary technology that we've developed, and it's really important that I'm able to convey the right image to them."
They finally pulled up outside the elegant white colonial-era shop house that had been converted into one of the island's most acclaimed restaurants. As Astrid got out of the car, Michael looked her over and said,
"You know, I think you made a mistake changing out of that first cocktail dress. It showed off your sexy legs. But at least you have those earrings. That's really going to make their jaws drop, especially the wife. It'll be great. I want them to know that I'm not going to be a cheap date."
Staring at him in disbelief, Astrid stumbled for a moment on the pristine wooden deck leading to the front door.
Michael grimaced. "Shit, I hope they didn't see you do that. Why the hell are you wearing those ridiculous boots anyway?"
Astrid breathed in deeply. "What's the wife's name again?"
"Wendy, and they have a dog named Gizmo. You can talk about the dog with her."
A wave of nausea churned like acid at the base of her throat. For the first time in her life, she had a true appreciation of how it felt to be treated like a cheap date. Chapter 10. The Bings.
Shanghai. Nick, Rachel, Carlton, and Roxanne stood on the wide stone steps of the Bing estate, watching Colette give a warm hug to the man that had just stepped out of the convoy of SUVs. "Who's that?" Nick asked Roxanne.
"Richie Yang," Roxanne replied, before adding in a whisper, "one of Colette's suitors, who's based in Beijing."
"He's rather dressed up for tonight."
"Oh, he's always very fashionable. Noblesse magazine ranked him the best-dressed man in China, and his father is ranked the fourth richest man in China by the Heron Wealth Report, with a net worth of U.S. $15.3 billion.
A short, slight man in his early 50s emerged from the armored SUV. His face had a slightly punched-in look, something that his neatly trimmed Errol Flynn mustache only served to accentuate.
"Is that Colette's father?" Nick asked.
"Yes, that is Mr. Bing."
"What's he ranked?" Nick asked in jest. He found these rankings to be rather ridiculous and more often than not wildly inaccurate.
"Mr. Bing is ranked fifth richest, but the Heron is wrong. At current share prices, Mr. Bing should be ranked higher than Richie's father. Fortune Asia has it correct. It ranks Mr. Bing at number 3.
Roxanne said earnestly. "What an outrage. I should write a letter to the Heron Wealth Report to protest the error," Nick joked.
"Oh, no need, sir. We already have,"
Roxanne replied. Mr. Bing helped a woman with shoulder-length bouffant hair, dark-tinted sunglasses, and a blue surgical mask over her face out of the car.
"That's Mrs. Bing," Roxanne whispered.
"I figured.
Is she ill?"
"No, she's just an extreme germaphobe. This is why she spends most of her time on the big island of Hawaii, where she thinks the air is freshest, and why this estate has a state-of-the-art air purifying system."
Everyone watched as Colette gave her parents polite half-hugs, after which the maid bearing the chest of hot towels prostrated herself in front of them as if she were offering gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Colette's parents, who wore matching navy blue cashmere Hermes trek suits, took the steaming towels and began wiping their hands and faces methodically. Mrs. Bing then stretched out her hands, and another maid rushed up and squirted hand sanitizer onto her eager palms. After they had finished, Wolseley offered his greetings, and then Colette gestured for the group to approach.
"Papa? Mama, meet my friends. You know Carlton, of course. This is his sister Rachel and her husband Nicholas Young. They live in New York, but Nicholas is from Singapore."
"Carlton Bao, how is your father doing these days?"
Colette's father said as he clapped him on the back before turning to Nick and Rachel.
"Jack Bing,"
he said, shaking their hands vigorously. He eyed Rachel with much interest, saying in Mandarin,
"You look unmistakably like your brother."
Colette's mother, by contrast, did not extend her hands, but nodded quickly as she peered at them from behind her surgical mask and Fendi sunglasses.
"Richie's plane was parked next to ours when we landed,"
Jack Bing said to his daughter.
"I just flew in from Chile," Richie explained. "I insisted he join us for dinner,"
Colette's father said.
"Of course, of course,"
Colette said.
"And look who's here. Carlton Bao, the man with 9 lives," Richie cracked.
Rachel noticed Carlton's jaw tense up the same way hers did whenever she was annoyed, but he laughed politely at Richie's comment. Everyone made their way into the grand salon. Upon entering, they were met by a man who Rachel thought looked rather familiar. He stood by the door bearing a tray that held a sparkling decanter and a freshly poured glass of scotch. It suddenly dawned on her that she had seen him at Din Tai Fung, where he had been introduced as the sommelier. She realized now that the Frenchman didn't work for the restaurant. He was the Bing's personal master sommelier.
"Would you care for the 12-year-old sherry to welcome you home, sir?" he said to Mr. Bing.
Nick had to bite his tongue to keep from cracking up.
The man sounded like he was offering Colette's father the services of a child prostitute.
Ah, Baptiste. Thank you, Jack Bing said in heavily accented English as he grabbed the heavy-cut glass tumbler from the tray.
Mrs. Bing removed her surgical mask, headed for the nearest sofa, and plopped down with a satisfied sigh.
No, Mother, let's not sit here. Let's sit on the sofa by the windows, Colette said.
Ay-ya, I've been flying all day, and my feet are so swollen. Why can't you just let me sit here?
Mother, I had the maid specially fluff the lotus silk pillows on that sofa for you, and the magnolia trees are in full bloom this week. We must sit by the window so you can enjoy them, Colette said sharply.
Rachel jumped at Colette's tone. Mrs. Bing got up reluctantly, and the whole group made their way to the wall of glass at the end of the grand salon.
Now, Mother, sit here so you can face the topiaries. Dad, you sit here. Mei Qing will bring little stools for your feet. Mei Qing, where are the pillow top stools?
Colette demanded. Colette made herself comfortable on the chaise lounge facing in from the windows, but for everyone else sitting in that spot, the setting sun cast a blinding glare. It began to dawn on Rachel and Nick that the elaborate welcoming ritual they had witnessed outside wasn't something that Colette did out of fear or filial respect for her parents. Rather, Colette was just an absolute control freak and liked everything done precisely her way. As everyone leaned at awkward angles to avoid the glare, Jack Bing gave Nick a discerning look. Who is this man married to Bao Gao Liang's love child? He has a jaw so chiseled it could slice sushi, and he carries himself like a duke. He nodded at Nick and said,
So, you are from Singapore. Very interesting country. What line of work are you in?
I'm a history professor, Nick replied.
Nick studied law at Oxford, but he teaches at New York University, Colette added.
You went to all the trouble of getting a law degree at Oxford, but you don't practice?
Jack asked. Must be a failed lawyer. I've never practiced. History was always my first passion. Next, he's going to ask me how much money I make or what my parents do.
Jack said.
Only these crazy Singaporeans can waste money sending their children to Oxford for nothing. Maybe he comes from one of those rich Indonesian Chinese families.
What does your father do?
And there it is. Nick had met innumerable Jack Bings over the years, successful, ambitious men who were always looking to make connections with people they deemed worthy. Nick knew that by simply dropping a few of the right names, he could easily impress someone like Jack Bing. Since he had no interest in doing that, he answered politely.
My father was an engineer, but he's retired now.
I see, Jack said. What a waste of a man. With his height and looks, he could have been a top banker or a politician. Now he's either going to dig further about my family or move on to Rachel's inquisition.
Nick asked out of courtesy, And what do you do, Mr. Bing?
Jack ignored Nick's question and turned his attention to Richie Yang.
So, Richie, tell me what you were doing in Chile of all places. Scouting for more mining companies that your father can acquire?
Oh, very nice. I've been deemed inconsequential, and he obviously couldn't give a damn what Rachel does.
Nick chuckled to himself.
Richie, who was staring intently at his titanium Virtu phone, scoffed at Jack's words.
Good God, no! I'm training for the Dakar Rally. You know, that off-road vehicle endurance race? It's held in South America now. The course starts in Argentina and ends in Peru.
You're still racing, Carlton piped in.
Of course.
Unbelievable. Carlton shook his head, his voice laced with anger.
What, you think I go running home to Mommy after just one little wreck?
Carlton went red in the face, and he looked like he was about to leap out of his chair and lunge at Richie.
Colette placed her hand on his arm and said in a cheery voice,
I've always wanted to visit Machu Picchu, but you know I get terrible altitude sickness. I went to St. Moritz last year and got so ill I could hardly do any shopping.
You never told me that. See how you constantly put your life in danger by going to dangerous places like Switzerland?
Mrs. Bing admonished her daughter. Colette turned to her mother and said in an irritated tone,
It was fine, Mother.
Now who died and made you Jackie Onassis? Why are you wearing those sunglasses in the house?
Mrs. Bing sighed dramatically.
Hiya, you don't know my latest suffering.
She took off her sunglasses and revealed puffy, swollen eyes.
I can't open my eyes properly anymore. See?
See?
I think I have this very rare disease called mayonnaise gravis.
Oh, you mean myasthenia gravis, Rachel offered.
Yes, yes, you know it, Mrs. Bing said excitedly. It affects the muscles around your eyes.
Rachel nodded sympathetically. I've heard it can be very debilitating, Mrs. Bing.
Please. Call me Lighty,
Colette's mother said, warming up to Rachel.
You do not have mayonnaise gravy or whatever you call it, Mother. Your eyes are all swollen because you sleep too much. Anyone would look like that if they slept 14 hours a day,
Colette said disdainfully.
I have to sleep 14 hours a day because of my chronic fatigue syndrome.
Another disease you do not have, Mother. Chronic fatigue syndrome does not make you sleepy, Colette said.
Well, I am going to see a specialist for mayonnaise Athena gravies next week in Singapore.
Colette rolled her eyes and explained to Rachel and Nick. My mother keeps 90% of all the doctors in Asia employed. Well, she's probably seen quite a few of my relatives then, Nick quipped. Mrs. Bing perked up.
Who are your doctor relatives?
Let's see. The one you might know is my Uncle Dicky, Richard Sien. He's a GP who has many society clients. No? Then there's his brother, Mark Sien, an ophthalmologist. My cousin, Charles Shang, a hematologist. My other cousin, Peter Leong, a neurologist.
Mrs. Bing gasped. Dr. Leong, who shares a clinic in KL with his wife, Gladys?
Yes, that's him.
Aiya, small world. I went to see him when I thought I had a brain tumor. And then I went to see Gladys for a second opinion.
Mrs. Bing began rattling away excitedly to her husband in a Chinese dialect that Nick couldn't recognize. Jack, who had been listening to Richie describe the special off-road vehicle he was designing with Ferrari, immediately circled back to Nick.
Peter Leong is your cousin. So Harry Leong must be your uncle?
Yes, he is. Now he thinks I'm a Leong. My market value is rebounding again. Jack eyed Nick with renewed interest.
My God, this boy is one of the Leong palm oil people, ranked number 3 on the Herenth Wealth Reports list of richest families in Asia. No wonder he can afford to be a teacher.
Is your mother a Leong? Jack asked excitedly. No, she's not. Harry Leong married my father's sister.
I see, Jack said. Family name Young. Never heard of them. This kid must come from the poor side of the family.
Mrs. Bing leaned toward Nick. What other doctors are in your family?
Do you know Dr. Malcolm Cheng, the Hong Kong cardiologist?
Oh my God, another one of my doctors, Mrs. Bing said excitedly. I went to see him for my irregular heartbeat. I thought maybe I had microvolve relapse, but it turned out I just needed to drink less Starbucks.
Richie, who was getting increasingly bored of all the doctor talk, turned to Colette. When's dinner?
It's almost ready. My Cantonese chef is making her famous parchment chicken with white truffles.
A delicacy where chicken pieces are mixed with a hoisin sauce and 5-spice garnish. Wrapped envelope style into square packets of parchment paper and left to marinate overnight.
white truffles, an ingredient not normally found in classical Cantonese cuisine, are an extra touch of decadence added by the Bing's wildly ambitious chef. The packets are then deep-fried, allowing the delicious marinade to caramelize onto the chicken. Finger-licking good.
Yum.
And as a special treat, I've also asked my French chef to make your favorite Grand Marnier souffle for dessert, Colette added.
You sure know the way to a man's heart, don't you?
Only certain men, Colette said, lifting one eyebrow.
Rachel glanced at Carlton to see how he was reacting to this exchange, but he seemed to be staring intently at his iPhone. He then looked up and nodded quickly at Colette, who caught his gesture but said nothing. Rachel couldn't decipher what was going on between them. Wolseley soon announced that dinner was ready, and the party adjourned to the dining room, which was a glassed-in terrace, up a short flight of steps overlooking the big reflecting pool.
It's just a casual family dinner tonight, so I thought we could dine informally on our little air-conditioned terrace, Colette explained.
Of course, the terrace was neither little nor informal. Lining the perimeter of the tennis court-sized space were tall silver hurricane votive lamps filled with flickering candles, and the round Zetan wood dining table that seated eight was elaborately set with casual Nymphenburg china. Maids stood at attention behind every chair, waiting as if their life depended on it to help ensure that each guest could properly manage the feat of sitting down.
Now, before we start dinner, I have a special treat for everyone, Colette announced.
She glanced at Wolseley and nodded. The lights were dimmed, and the first strains of the classic Chinese folk song Jasmine Flower began to boom from the outdoor loudspeakers. The trees around the great reflecting pool outside suddenly lit up in brilliant shades of emerald, and the waters of the pool, lit in deep purple, started to churn. Then, as the operatic singing began, thousands of water jets shot up into the night sky, choreographed to the music and morphing into elaborate formations and a rainbow riot of colors.
My goodness! It's just like the Bellagio dancing fountain in Las Vegas!
Mrs. Bing squealed in delight.
When did you have this put in? Jack asked his daughter.
They've been working on it in secret for months. I wanted it to be ready in time for my summer garden party with Pan Ting Ting, Colette proudly explained.
All this just to impress Pan Ting Ting?
Nonsense, I did this for Mother.
And how much is this costing me?
Oh, it was much less than you might think. Only around 20 bucks.
Colette's father sighed, shaking his head in resignation. Nick and Rachel exchanged looks. They knew that among the wealthy Chinese, bucks meant millions. Colette turned to Rachel.
Do you like it?
It's spectacular, and whoever is singing sounds a lot like Celine Dion, Rachel said.
It is Celine. It's her famous duet in Mandarin with Song Juying, Colette said.
As the water spectacle ended, a line of maids entered the dining terrace, each bearing an antique meissen platter. The lights came on again, and in perfect unison, the maids placed a platter of parchment chicken in front of each dinner guest. Everyone began undoing their parchments, which had been adorably knotted in butcher's twine, and tantalizing aromas came seeping out of the golden brown paper. As Nick was about to take his first bite into the succulent-looking chicken thigh, he spied the trusty Roxanne creep up to Colette and whisper something into her ear. Colette grinned broadly and nodded. She looked across the table at Rachel and said,
I have one final surprise for you.
Rachel saw Bao Gao Liang coming up the stairs to the dining room. Everyone at the table rose in deference to the high-ranking minister. Gasping in delight, Rachel got up from her seat to greet her father. Bao Gao Liang looked just as surprised to see Rachel. He hugged her warmly, much to Carlton's astonishment. He had never seen his father display physical affection for anyone like that before. Not even his mother.
I am so sorry to interrupt your dinner. I was in Beijing a few hours ago, and I suddenly got strong-armed by these two conspirators and put onto a plane, Gao Liang said,
gesturing toward Carlton and Colette. No interruption at all. It is an honor to have you here with us, Bao Buzang.
Mandarin for minister, the correct form of address for a high-ranking official.
Jack Bing said, getting up and patting Gao Liang on the back. This calls for a celebration. Where's Betty's? We need some very special tiger bone wine.
Yes, tiger power for everyone, Richie cheered, getting up to shake Bao Gao Liang's hand.
That was a very insightful speech you gave last week about the dangers of monetary inflation, Ling Tao.
Mandarin for boss, the correct form of address for really sucking up to a high-ranking official.
Oh, were you there? Bao Gao Liang asked.
No, I watched it on CCTV. I'm a politics junkie.
Well, I'm glad some of you younger generation pay attention to this country's affairs, Gao Liang said, casting a sideways glance at Carlton.
I only pay attention when I feel like our leaders are being on the level with me. I don't watch any of the speeches that are all hype or rhetoric.
Carlton had to resist rolling his eyes. A place setting next to Rachel was swiftly arranged for Gao Liang, and Colette graciously gestured.
Bao Buzang, please, do sit down.
I'm sorry to see that Mrs. Bao couldn't join us. Is she still held up in Hong Kong? Rachel asked.
Yes, unfortunately, but she sends her regards, Gao Liang said quickly.
Carlton let out a snort. Everyone at the table looked at him momentarily. Carlton looked like he was about to say something, but then he changed his mind and chucked a full glass of Montrachet in several quick gulps. As the meal resumed, Rachel filled her father in on everything they had done since arriving in Shanghai, while Nick chatted amiably with the Bings and Richie Yang. Nick was relieved that Bao Gao Liang had finally shown up, and he could see how excited Rachel was to spend time with him. But he couldn't help noticing that a few seats away, Carlton sat stone-faced while Colette seemed to be getting more and more agitated as each course was served.
What's the deal?
Both of them looked like they could spontaneously combust at any moment. Suddenly, while everyone was in the midst of savoring the Lancho-style hand-pulled noodles with lobster and abalone, Colette put down her chopsticks and whispered into her father's ear. The two of them abruptly got up.
Please, excuse us for a moment, Colette said with a forced smile.
Colette marched her father downstairs, and as soon as they were out of earshot, she began to scream.
What is the point of hiring the best butler in England to teach you proper manners when you just won't learn? You were slurping your noodles so loudly it made my teeth ache. And the way you spit out your bones onto the table, my God, Christian Liagre would have a heart attack if he knew what was happening on his beautiful table. And how many times have I told you not to kick your shoes off when we are dining with company? Don't lie to me. I could smell something from a mile away, and I know it wasn't the snow pea shoots simmered in stinky tofu.
Jack laughed at his daughter's tantrum. I am the son of a fisherman. I keep telling you, you cannot change me. But don't worry. It doesn't matter how good my manners are.
As long as this remains fat.
He patted the wallet in his back pocket.
Even in China's best dining rooms, no one will care if I spit on the table.
Rubbish! Everyone can change. Look how well Mother's doing. She hardly chews with her mouth open anymore, and she wields her chopsticks like an elegant Shanghainese lady.
Colette's father shook his head in amusement. I
really pity that idiot Richie Yang. He doesn't know what he's getting himself into.
What on earth do you mean?
Don't try to deceive your own father. Your plan of dangling Carlton Bao in front of Richie has paid off like a charm. I have a feeling he's planning to propose to you any day now.
That's ridiculous, Colette said,
still fuming at her father's negligent etiquette.
Really?
Then why did he beg his way onto my plane to ask my permission for your hand in marriage?
How silly of him. I hope you told him exactly where he could stuff that proposal.
Actually, I gave Richie my blessing.
I think it will be a brilliant match. Not to mention that I will finally be able to stop fighting over companies with his father. Jack grinned, flashing the crooked incisor that Colette was constantly begging him to get fixed.
Don't start getting any fantasies of mergers, Dad, because I have no interest in marrying Richie Young.
Jack laughed, and then he said in a low whisper,
Silly girl, I never asked if you were interested in marrying him. Your interest is not my concern.
Then he turned and headed back upstairs. Chapter 11 Corinna and Kitty, Hong Kong.
She's late again.
Corinna stood fuming by the revolving doors outside Glory Tower. She had specifically told Kitty to arrive no later than 10:30, but it was now almost 11.
I'm going to have to give her my punctuality lecture, the one I haven't had to use since working with that Burmese family in 2002.
Corinna thought, as she nodded politely at all the nicely dressed people rushing past her into the building. A few minutes later, Kitty's modest new pearl-white Mercedes S-Class sedan pulled up at the curb, and Kitty emerged from the car. Corinna jabbed at her watch anxiously, and Kitty quickened her pace across the plaza. At least Kitty had diligently followed her advice in the appearance department and gone with the complicated updo, the overly whitened face, and the burlesque red lipstick. In their place, the immaculately transformed Kitty only had a dusting of blush on her cheeks, a light apricot gloss on her lips, and a relaxed mane of chestnut highlighted hair cut 4 inches shorter. She wore a baby chicken yellow Carolina Herrera dress with silk veil puff sleeves, low-heeled beige pumps of indeterminate brand, and a simple Givenchy green crocodile clutch, with her only jewelry being a pair of pearl stud earrings and a dainty diamond sideways cross necklace by Ileana Macri. The overall effect rendered her virtually unrecognizable.
You're very late. Now we will be noticed when we enter, as opposed to blending in with the crowd. Corinna scolded.
I'm sorry. This whole church thing has got me so nervous. I changed 6 times. Does this look okay?
Kitty asked, readjusting the pleats on her skirt. Corinna scrutinized her for a moment. The cross might be overdoing it a bit for your first visit, but I will let it pass. Otherwise, it looks quite appropriate. You no longer remind me of Daphne Guinness.
The church is inside this office building?
Kitty asked, a little confused as they entered the peach marble-clad lobby of Glory Tower.
I told you, this is a very special church,
Corinna replied as they went up an escalator to the main reception hall. There, a greeting table draped with ruffled blue bunting was manned by a trio of teenage greeters and several security guards. An American girl with a headset and an iPad came bounding toward them with a big toothy grin.
Good morning. Are you joining us for the main service or the Seekers class?
The main service, Corinna answered.
Your names, please?
Corinna Kotung and Kitty, I mean, Catherine Tai, Corinna replied, using the name Kitty had used before she became a soap opera star. The girl scrolled through her iPad and said,
I'm sorry. I don't see you on the list for Sunday services.
Oh, I forgot to mention. We're guests of Helen Mok Espray.
Okay. Yes, I see you here. Helen Mok Espray +2.
A female security guard approached and presented each of them with lanyards with freshly printed name badges attached in plastic sleeves. Printed in a vibrant purple font were the words Stratosphere Church, Sunday Worship, Guest of Helen Mok Espray, followed by the church's motto in italics, Communing with Christ at a higher level.
Put these on and take the first elevator up to the 45th floor,
the guard instructed. When Kitty and Corinna reached the 45th floor, another greeter with a headset stood waiting to escort them to an elevator bank across the hall, this one taking them up to the 79th floor.
We're almost there. Just one more set of elevators.
Corinna said as she straightened the collar on Kitty's dress.
Are we going all the way to the top?
The very top. See, I told you to be early precisely because it takes 15 minutes just to get up there.
All this trouble for a church,
Kitty grumbled. Kitty, you are about to enter the most exclusive church in Hong Kong. Stratosphere was started by the billionaire Pentecostal Siu sisters and is strictly by invitation. Not only is it the highest church in the world, at 99 stories above the earth, but it boasts more members on the South China Morning Post rich list than any other private club on the island. With that introduction, the elevator doors opened onto the 99th floor, and Kitty was momentarily blinded by the light. She found herself standing in the apex of the tower under a soaring atrium, its cathedral-like ceilings constructed almost entirely of glass, flooding the space with intense sunlight. Kitty wanted to put on her sunglasses, but she suspected this would elicit another scolding from Corinna. The next thing to assault her senses was the blaring rock music. As they took a seat in one of the back rows, Kitty saw hundreds of worshippers with their hands raised and waving in unison as they sang along to the Christian rock band. The band was made up of a strapping blonde lead singer who could have passed for a Hemsworth brother, a Chinese female drummer with a buzz cut, another white guy on bass guitar, three college-aged Chinese girls singing backup, and a scrawny teenage Chinese boy in a green Izod shirt three sizes too big pounding away frantically on a Yamaha keyboard. Everyone sang. Jesus Christ, come into me! Jesus Christ, come fill me up! Kitty took in the whole spectacle with childlike awe. None of this was anything like what she ever imagined a Christian church service to be. The celestial light, the thumping music, the hunky rock god on stage, and best of all, the view. From her seat, she had a jaw-dropping bird's-eye view of Hong Kong Island, from Pacific Place Mall in Admiralty all the way to North Point. If this wasn't heaven on earth, what was? She took out her phone and began snapping a few covert pictures. She had never seen the top of two IFC up close before.
What on earth do you think you're doing? Put that away. You're in the house of God.
Corinna hissed into her ear. Kitty put away her phone, red-faced, but whispered to Corinna.
You lied to me. Look how everyone is dressed to the nines except me.
Kitty said, pointing to the young woman in the front row in a white Chanel suit, the three enormous Bulgari gemstone rings on her fingers sparkling brightly as she waved her arms back and forth.
She's the pastor's wife. She's entitled to dress like that. But as a new visitor, you can't.
Kitty was aggravated at first, but as she gazed at the gigantic cumulus clouds in the crisp azure sky, with the roar of the catchy chorus in her ears and everyone around her singing their guts out, she began to feel strange new emotions stirring within. The dapper guy in the houndstooth jacket and tight Saint Laurent jeans next to her was screeching off-key.
Everything I need is right here, Jesus! Everything I need!
Tears of joy streaming down his face. She found it strangely sexy to see this young hipster crying so openly. After half an hour of singing, the blonde lead singer, who turned out to be the pastor, said to the congregation in an American accent,
"It fills me with so much joy to see all your bright, happy faces today. Let's share the love. Let's share the joy by passing it along to the person next to you. How about that?"
Before Kitty knew what was happening, the crying hipster turned to her and gave her a big bear hug. Then the middle-aged Tai Tai in front of her turned around and embraced her warmly. Kitty was stunned. Hong Kongers hugging each other? How was this possible? And not just one or two friends who knew each other. Perfect strangers were hugging each other and introducing themselves. This was a miracle. My God, if this was what it was like to be a Christian, she wanted in right now. When the service finally concluded, Corinna turned to Kitty.
At last, time for coffee and cake. Follow me.
I don't want to spoil my appetite. Aren't we going to Cuisine for lunch?
Kitty, the whole reason I brought you here is so you can socialize with these people over coffee and cake. This is the main event. Many of the members are the younger generation of Hong Kong old guard families, and this is the best chance you have of getting to know them. They will be much more accepting of you because they are born-again Christians.
Born again? How can you be born twice?
Hiya, I'll explain later. But the important thing you need to know about being a born-again Christian is that once you repent and accept Jesus into your heart, you are forgiven for all your sins, no matter what they are. Whether you murdered your parents, slept with your stepson, or embezzled millions to fund your singing career, these people have to forgive you. Now, what I hope to accomplish today is to get you into one of the Bible study fellowships. The group that everyone wants to join is Helen Mok Espres. But it's a very close circle of only the top ladies. To begin with, I would aim for the group led by my niece, Justina Wei. It's a younger crowd, and there are quite a few girls from good families in that one. Justina's paternal grandfather, Wei Ra Min, started Yummy Cup Noodles. So everyone calls her the instant noodle heiress. Kitty was steered toward a moon-faced woman in her early 30s. She couldn't believe that this person dressed in a secretary-like navy pantsuit was the noodle heiress she had heard so much about.
Justina! Hiya! Kum ngoi mo kin!
Cantonese for long time no see.
Meet my friend, Catherine Tai.
Hello. Are you related to Stephen Tai?
Justina asked, immediately trying to place Kitty on her social map.
No.
Justina, who was usually only comfortable talking to people she knew from birth, was forced to resort to her default question.
So, which school did you go to? I didn't go to school in Hong Kong,
Kitty responded, a little flustered. Justina's long, frizzy, limp hair reminded her of instant noodles. She wondered what would happen if you poured boiling water over them and let them sit for 3 minutes.
Catherine went to school abroad,
Corinna quickly interjected.
Oh, is this your first time worshipping with us?
Justina cocked her head.
Yes. Well then, welcome to Stratosphere. Which church do you normally attend?
Kitty tried to think of all the churches she passed every single day on the way down from her apartment on the peak. But her mind temporarily went blank.
The Church of Volturi,
she blurted out, picturing the church-like space from the Twilight movies where those scary old vampires sat on thrones.
Oh, I don't know that one. Is it over on Kowloon side?
Yes, it is, Corinna said, coming to the rescue again. I really must introduce Catherine, to Helen Mok Espres. I see Helen already grabbing the flowers from the church altar, so I know she's about to leave. Pulling Kitty off to the side, Corinna said,
My God, that was an utter disaster. What is wrong with you today? Where is the girl who charmed the socks off Evangeline de Ayala?
Sorry, I don't know what's happening. I guess I'm just not used to all this, my new name, pretending to be a Christian, dressing this way. Without my normal makeup or proper jewelry, I feel like I don't have my armor on. People always used to ask me about what I was wearing, and now I can't even talk about that.
Corinna shook her head in dismay.
You're an actress. It's time you put your improv skills to the test.
Just think of it as playing a new role.
Remember, you are no longer the evil twin sister. You are the good wife now.
You spend all your time taking care of your invalid husband and your young daughter. And this is the only time all week you get to socialize with people. So you must be animated and grateful. Now let's try again with Helen Mok Espres. Helen was born a Mok, divorced a Quek, and is now married to Sir Harold Espres. You should address her as Lady Espres.
Corinna steered Kitty toward the hospitality table, where a woman with an enormous coiffed helmet of hair was furtively wrapping up 6 enormous slices of black forest cake in paper napkins and stuffing them into a big black Oraton handbag.
"Helen, thank you so much for putting us on your list today," Corinna chirped.
Helen jumped a little.
"Oh, hi. Corinna, I'm just taking home a little bit of cake for Harold. You know what a sweet tooth he has."
"Yes, Harold's just like you when it comes to sweets, isn't he? Before you leave, I wanted to introduce my guest, Catherine Tai. Catherine used to belong to the Volturi Church in Kowloon, but she's thinking of changing."
"I love your church. Thank you so much for inviting us today, Lady Asprey,"
Kitty said sweetly. Helen looked Kitty up and down.
"What a lovely little cross that is,"
she complimented, before turning to Corinna and saying sotto voce, "I had one very similar to that, but I think one of the new maids stole it. Those new girls from you-know-where are just so untrustworthy."
"My God, I miss my Norma and Nettie. You know I paid them so well that now they've abandoned me to start a beach bar in Cebu."
A lady, chicly attired in a celadon-colored A-line dress, came up to the table with 2 carafes freshly refilled with coffee.
"My goodness, what happened to all the cake? I guess I have to go down to the kitchen again," she sighed.
"Ophie, before you run off, meet my friend Catherine Tai. Catherine, this is my cousin, Fiona Tung Cheng," Corinna said.
"Pleased to meet you, Catherine," Fiona said, before giving Kitty a more discerning look. "You look so familiar. Are you by any chance related to Stephen Tai?"
"They're distant cousins," Corinna cut in, trying to stop her from asking more questions. Kitty smiled calmly at Fiona and said,
"You know, I just adore your dress. Narciso Rodriguez, isn't it?"
"Why, yes, thank you," Fiona beamed. It wasn't often that anyone complimented her clothes.
"I met him a few years ago,"
Kitty continued, ignoring Corinna's glare. She was going to talk about fashion at church, even if it gave Corinna a stroke.
"Really? You met Narciso?"
Fiona said.
"Yes, I went to his fashion show in New York." "Don't you think it's wonderful that a boy from a family of Cuban immigrants can become such a successful fashion designer? It's like the message of today's sermon. Anyone with a willing heart can be born again."
Helen Mock Esprey beamed in approval. "How true. My goodness, why don't you join my Bible study group? We could use another fresh young perspective like yours." Kitty's face lit up as Corinna looked on like a proud mother. My God, Kitty had hit pay dirt on her very first try. Maybe Corinna had misjudged her capabilities. At this rate, Kitty was bound to win the ladies over at Bible study and would be getting invited to all sorts of other old guard events by the time the festive season began. Just then, Eddie Ching came strolling over to his wife Fiona. "Are you done with your coffee duties yet?" Turning to Helen and Corinna, he bragged. "We are expected to lunch at the Laduris, and it would be very bad form to be late."
"I'm almost finished. I just need to make one more kitchen run for cake. It's disappeared so fast today. Eddie, meet Corinna's friend, Catherine."
Eddie made an obligatory nod in Kitty's direction.
"Help me with the cake, and then we can get out of here faster," Fiona said.
Walking toward the kitchen with Eddie, she said,
"That nice lady is going to join our Bible study. I love her dress. If only you would let me wear a bright color like that."
Eddie stared at Kitty again, suddenly narrowing his eyes. "What did you say her name was again?"
"Catherine Tai. She's a distant cousin of Stephen's."
Eddie snorted. Maybe on Mars they might be related, but here on Earth they certainly aren't. "Take a good look at her, Fee." Fiona stared searchingly at Kitty's face. Suddenly, she let out a gasp of recognition and dropped the empty metal cake tray onto the floor with a loud clang. All eyes in the room were on them. Relishing the attention, Eddie made a beeline to where Corinna,
Kitty and Helen were standing, and announced smugly, "Corinna, I know you have always tried to take on these charity cases, but this time you've really been had. This woman who's trying to pass herself off as Stephen Tai's cousin is an imposter. She's actually Kitty Pong, the gold digger who broke my brother Alistair's heart and eloped with Bernard Tai 2 years ago. Hello, Kitty." Kitty lowered her eyes. Stung with hurt, she wasn't quite sure how to react. Why was she being called an imposter? None of this was her doing. Corinna was the one who had told Fiona she was related to the Stephen person. She turned to Corinna, hoping she would come to her defense, but the woman just stood there. Helen Mock Asprey glared at Kitty and said in a sharp voice, "You're that Kitty Pong? Carol Tai is a good friend of mine. What have you done with her son? And why won't you let Carol see her own granddaughter? Gum Hak Sum."
Cantonese for "so black-hearted." Chapter 12.
Astrid, Singapore.
"Are you going for a run now?"
Astrid asked Michael as he came downstairs in nothing but a pair of black Puma running shorts. "Yeah, I need to blow off some steam."
"Don't forget, we have Friday night dinner in an hour."
"I'll join you later."
"We can't be late tonight. My Thai cousins, Adam and Pia, are visiting. And the Thai ambassador has arranged a special perform-"
"I don't give a fuck about your Thai cousins," Michael snapped as he ran out the door.
He's still upset.
Astrid got up from the sofa and headed upstairs to her study. She logged onto Gmail and saw Charlie's name lit up.
Thank God.
She immediately pinged him. "Astrid Leong Teo."
"Still at work?"
"Charlie Wu." "Yep. Never leave my office these days except for juice breaks."
"ALT, question for you. When you're in the midst of negotiating major deals with potential clients, do you also entertain them?"
CW. "What do you mean by entertain?"
ALT. "Do you take them out to business dinners?"
CW. LOL. "I thought you meant get them laid." "Yes, there are always business dinners. More lunches, actually. We sometimes do a celebratory dinner when a deal closes." "Why?" ALT.
"I'm just trying to educate myself. It's funny. I've had to deal with all kinds of social events with intricate protocols my whole life. But when it comes to the corporate dinner, I'm totally ignorant."
CW. "Well, you've never had to be a corporate wife." ALT.
"Does Isabel usually come to your work dinners?"
CW. "Isabel at a client dinner? Ha! Hell would freeze over. Client entertaining rarely involves spouses." ALT.
"Even for international clients who are visiting Asia?"
CW. "When international clients come to Asia, they generally don't bring their wives. Back in my dad's time in the 1980s and 90s, yes, maybe, some wives wanted to come to Hong Kong or Singapore to shop, but not so much anymore. On the rare occasions that they do, we really try to roll out the red carpet so that clients can concentrate on work and not worry that their wives are getting ripped off at Stanley Market."
ALT. "So you don't feel that a crucial component of deal-making involves a dinner with the wives?"
CW. "Not at all. These days, most of my clients are single 22-year-old monosyllabic Zuckerbergs, and many of them are women. What's up? I'm assuming Michael is trying to enlist your help with some clients?" ALT.
"It already happened."
CW.
"So why are you asking?"
ALT.
"Well, it was a total disaster. The deal fell through, and guess who got the blame?"
CW. "Huh? Why would you get the blame for a botched deal? Last time I checked, you weren't his employee. Did you spill scalding hot bak kut teh onto the client's lap or something?"
Literally translated as Meat Bone Tea. This is not the name of a summer event on Fire Island, but rather a popular Singaporean soup that consists of melt-in-your-mouth pork ribs simmered for many hours in an intoxicatingly complex broth of herbs and spices. ALT. It's a long story. Pretty funny, actually. I'll tell you about it when I see you in Hong Kong next month. CW. Come on, you can't leave me hanging like this. Astrid took her hands off the keyboard. For a moment, she debated whether to make some excuse and beg off, or to continue with her story. She didn't want to trash her husband to Charlie, knowing he already had a colored impression of Michael. But her need to vent got the better of her. ALT. Michael has apparently been cultivating these clients for a while, and the bigwig and his whole team flew in to finalize the deal. He brought his wife, so Michael asked me to organize a nice dinner someplace that would impress all of them. The couple are really into food, so I chose Andre. CW. Not bad. For out-of-towners, I also like Waku Gin. ALT. I love Tetsuya's cooking, but I felt it wouldn't be right for this crowd. Anyway, for the first time ever, Michael was obsessing over what I wore to dinner. I had on what I felt to be the perfect outfit, but he wanted me to change into something more ostentatious. CW. But that's not your style. ALT. I wanted to be a team player, so I wore this irresponsibly large pair of earrings, emeralds and diamonds that really should not be seen in public unless you're going to a state dinner at Windsor Castle or a wedding in Jakarta. CW. Sounds amazing. ALT. Well, it ended up being the wrong choice. We get to the restaurant late, and Michael insisted on driving his new vintage Ferrari and parking it right outside. So everyone is already staring at us as we walked in. Then it turns out the bigwig is from Northern California. Lovely low-key couple. The wife was chic, but in an understated way. She was wearing a beautiful tunic dress, strappy sandals, and these artsy earrings that some kid had made for her. I looked outrageously overdressed by comparison, and it made everyone uncomfortable. Everything went south from there, and today Michael came home pretty upset. They nixed the whole deal. CW. And Michael blames you? ALT. He blames himself more. But I do see it was partly my fault. I should have followed my gut and stuck to the first outfit. Truth be told, I was a little cheesed off that Michael was second-guessing my choice. So I really put my foot on the accelerator to up the bling quotient with the second outfit, but it was way too much, and it put off the client. Astrid's phone started to ring, and she picked it up when she saw it was Charlie on the line. Astrid Leong. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Clients don't give a shit how the wives of their business partners are dressed, especially in the tech world. I'm sure there are many reasons why this deal did not work out, but trust me, your accessories had nothing to do with it. You see that, don't you?
I get what you're saying, and I agree, partly. But it was an unusual night and a strange confluence of events. You just had to be there.
Astrid... That's total BS. I'm mad at Michael that he would try to make you feel like you were in any way responsible.
Astrid sighed. I know I am not ultimately responsible. But I do see that if I had done things a little differently, the outcome might have been more positive. I'm sorry it's upset you. I didn't mean to do that. I guess I was just selfishly venting after Michael and I got into a fight. I feel bad for him, I really do. I know he worked so hard to try to get this deal off the ground.
Cry me a river.
Michael's company is still doing fantastic. His stock hasn't lost a single point over this. But he somehow managed to make you feel bad about it. And that's what worries me.
You just don't see how preposterous this whole line of reasoning is. You did nothing wrong, Astrid. Nothing.
Thank you for saying that.
Hey, I gotta run. Cassian is screaming about something. Hanging up the phone, Astrid closed her eyes and let the tears seep out. She didn't dare tell Charlie what Michael had really said when he came home that afternoon. He had come into Cassian's bedroom, where Astrid was crouched under the desk with three chairs barricading her in, and she was wearing the emerald earrings, pretending to be a captured Guinevere to Cassian's King Arthur.
Those goddamn earrings again! You lost me the biggest deal because of those earrings! Michael scoffed.
What on earth are you talking about? Astrid asked, peering out from her hiding place.
The deal fell through today. They weren't anywhere near my asking price.
I'm so sorry, hun. Astrid emerged from underneath the desk and tried to give him a hug, but he pulled away after a second. She followed him down the hallway to their bedroom. As Michael began changing out of his work clothes, he continued.
We really screwed up that client dinner. I don't blame you. I blame me. I was the fool who asked you to change. Apparently your look didn't go over so well with everyone.
Astrid couldn't believe her ears.
I don't understand why any of that would matter anyway. Who really cares what I was wearing?
In this business, perception is everything. And a crucial component of deal-making is the all-important client dinner with the wives.
I thought we had a lovely time. Wendy was raving about every dish, and we even swapped numbers.
Michael sat down on the bed and put his head in his hands for a moment.
Don't you see? It doesn't really matter what the wife thinks. I was trying to show the guys that I run the leading tech company in Singapore. That we are the blue chip choice, and we have the blue chip lifestyle to match it. And they needed to pay us what we're worth. But it all backfired.
Maybe you shouldn't have driven the Ferrari. Maybe that was too obvious, Astrid said.
No, that's not it. Everyone loved the Ferrari. What they didn't get was your style.
My style? Astrid said incredulously.
All this strange vintage stuff. No one gets it. Why can't you just wear Chanel once in a while like everyone else?
I've been doing a lot of thinking, and I think we need to make some big changes. I really need to revamp my image completely. People don't take me seriously because of how we live. They think, if he has one of the most successful tech companies in Asia, why doesn't he live in a bigger house? Why isn't he in the press more? Why does his wife still drive an Acura? And why doesn't she have better jewels? Astrid shook her head in disbelief. Every serious jewelry collector knows about my family's collection.
That's part of the problem, hun. No one outside of a tiny inbred circle has even heard of your family because they are so goddamn private.
At dinner, my client couldn't imagine that those rambutan-sized rocks you had on were real.
So instead of making you look more expensive, it looked like you were wearing cheap costume jewelry.
Do you know what their general counsel told Silas Teo over drinks last night?
He said that when we first walked into dinner, all the guys thought my date was some girl from Orchard Towers.
Orchard Towers? Astrid was confused.
That's where all the escorts work. With those boots and earrings you were wearing the other night. The guys thought you were a high-class whore.
Astrid stared at her husband, too stung to speak.
We need to go big or go home. I need to hire a new PR consultant, and you need a new look. And I think tomorrow you should call that MGS friend of yours, who is a realtor. What's her name again? Miranda.
You mean Carmen?
Yes, Carmen. Tell her we need to start looking at new houses. I want a place that will make everyone who comes over lao nua the moment they drive up.
Literally translates as dribble saliva in Hokkien. In other words, to drool over something with envy.